Good morning and welcome to this MoneyWeb webinar. I'm Pranesha Naidu and today we're talking leadership with CEB, now Gartner. This topic's become increasingly relevant as around 50% of the South African workforce is currently looking for new jobs. Joining us to discuss how to develop, identify and even retain a wide and diverse pool of future leaders who are ready to take on evolving business needs is Lauren Huntington, a management consultant at CEB, now Gartner. Now, as usual, if you'd like to ask Lauren a question, you can do so via the GoToWebinar facility on the Money website. Good morning, Lauren.
Good morning.
Now, Lauren, as mentioned in CEB Gartner's latest Global Talent Monitor, around half the workforce is currently looking for new jobs. And that's despite a backdrop of sluggish economic growth and fewer opportunities. Tell us, what are the motivating factors behind this?
To your point, our South African workforce remains undeterred by some of the doom and gloom, which means that they are still very mobile. And of those 50% who are actively looking for other opportunities, 16% also say that if the right opportunity comes their way, they're very ready to jump ship. There are a range of factors underpinning this. One of the most common we see is compensation, but some of the others are around work-life balance. An important one coming to the fore is also development opportunities and opportunities to progress.
When I was looking through some of this research, what stood out to me was meritocracy, and a number of employees seem to cite this as a major gripe. Can you tell us a bit about that as well?
Absolutely. Fairness is a big motivator when it comes to engagement for our employees. So in meritocracies, individuals are looking for recognition and reward for the effort that they put in.
And how should management and companies respond to some of these challenges, that are, of course, driving their workers away?
They're a range. I mean, they're the more obvious, which is to address some of the meritocracy issues around compensation and reward. But there are a lot more indirect ways, particularly in organizations now where there are a lot of constraints around budget. So the obvious solution around paying individuals more is often not a reality. Those less obvious types of ways to engage individuals is really to ensure that they're invested in the longer term career with your particular organization. So they're willing to stay for the longer term. They believe that this is the organization where they can attain their ultimate career goals.
Now, having them there willing to stay for the longer term, making the organization one where they believe they can attain their career goals, this is something that obviously leads to leadership. And as you've said, we're in an environment of business unusual, in which leadership requirements are constantly evolving and they're changing much faster than they used to. How are the leadership requirements of companies changing today? How have they changed?
The leaders of today are expected to do a lot more with a lot less. So during times of uncertainty and unprecedented uncertainty, leaders need to be a lot more agile in terms of how they are responding, both from how they lead a business, but also in terms of how they lead their people. The types of teams that they're leading are also fundamentally different. So teams you often have a much wider span of control, so more individuals in your team. You often have less face-to-face time with your individuals or the individuals in your team, and your team is often more geographically dispersed. As a leader, you're also often expected now to work across multiple silos. So no longer can you just be a specialist within your particular domain, the best financial manager, mm-hmm. but you actually need to understand a little bit about HR, about operations, about the rest of the business to be able to break down those silos within the organization and execute with a lot of effectiveness against this backdrop of turbulence.
So what are some of the makings of a good leader?
So in the CEB and our Gartner research, we found that in order to identify some of your future leaders, there's three key components that you want to be looking at. The first is around ability. So that's the ability to be able to deal with complex and ambiguous information, still make effective decisions when you don't have all the information at hand. These types of leaders are 11 times more likely to be effective in more senior roles. So that's the first component. The second component is about aspiration. So you want leaders that really want to be there, mm-hmm. that are engaged with that position, where, you know, being a leader is what gets them up in the morning. It motivates them. They feel in flow with that type of work. These types of leaders are 12 times more likely as well to not only be engaged themselves, but to engage their workforce. Then the final aspect that's really important for us as well is around engagement. So you want to make sure that your leaders are willing to put in the discretionary effort, that extra oomph every day to make things happen. And secondly, that your leaders are likely to stay with you for the mm-hmm. longer term. Leadership churn can have a lot of unintended negative consequences. So we want to make sure that our leaders are there for a particular period of time to be impactful within our organizations.
Now, when HR managers go about using some of these methods to identify potential leaders, how much weight should they put to considering what people have already done in the past and what they're capable of doing in the future?
That's an interesting question because, you know, often through a lot of these selection processes when it comes to leadership, we put a lot of emphasis on what people have already done or the CV. Yet we find that that's not the most predictive of individuals that are most likely to perform in the future, being that what made you successful in the past will not necessarily make you as successful in the future. Leadership roles are evolving significantly. In fact, the majority of HR departments and leaders themselves tell us that they don't actually know what their future leadership positions are going to look like in 3 years' time, in 5 years' time. So a particular basket of experience doesn't necessarily set you up for success. Rather, a particular set of preferences, of competencies, of ways of working are more likely to be able to put you in a position where you can respond to those types of turbulent environments.
You mentioned that some HR managers say they don't actually know what the leadership requirements are going to look like in 3 to 5 years' time, and that's related to their specific companies. How then should they go about identifying the current needs and finding employees who can meet these current needs, but also who are flexible enough to take on any other challenges that may come?
It's a combination of two things. I mean, the first is we don't necessarily want to reinvent the wheel. So we ask HR practitioners to look towards best practice and research to inform the types of decisions that they're making. So we know that certain factors are more predictive of leadership effectiveness. So take those into account. But at the same time, this is not a one-size-fits-all model. Mm-hmm. We really encourage our HR leaders to be in touch with business because business is ultimately at the front line. They understand what their business needs. They understand how quickly their business is evolving. So really to be in touch with that, to make sure that however they're defining leadership is unique to that organization, is tailored to that organization, and will be robust over the longer term.
And now, let's say this organization has found the ideal leaders for themselves. How do they then go about keeping these employees motivated, aspirant, and engaged?
That's an important question because it's great identifying leaders, but if they don't stay with you long enough to actually success into that particular position, then a lot of that effort goes wasted. Now, there's two parts to that answer. The first is promoting the individual into a particular position, but that's obviously not the most immediate, and that's not always feasible where there are limited positions available. So the second important point is how do you keep them engaged while they are in waiting for a particular position? And for us, that's really having continued conversations with that individual around their aspiration, making them as ready as possible for when that position does become available. So the types of things that you would want to make available for that individual would be stretch assignments, for example, increased mentoring and coaching to make sure that that individual feels valued and to make that sure that that individual is stretched so that when that position does become available, they're ready now and not successed just on the basis of, well, you are identified for a succession plan.
And you mentioned that sometimes organizations cannot provide employees with the opportunities they want at the time that they want them. Why do they struggle with this in some cases?
So there's a couple of issues. I think first is there when it comes to succession planning, the first issue is around pipelines to nowhere. So often we are grooming particular successors for particular positions. So our next COO, our next CIO. Yet, as I said earlier, these positions are really evolving. So sometimes these positions are no longer relevant within a particular structure, meaning those successors that we've groomed for a particular position may no longer be relevant. So pipelines to nowhere is the first challenge. I think the second challenge is really around clogged pipelines, where we are identifying many successes, yet we have very few relevant positions available. Then the onus is really on the organization to look at how can we enrich careers, not just vertically, but also horizontally to keep those individuals engaged. Some of the other challenges we see are on the opposite end of the extreme, which is narrow pipelines, where we simply actually don't have enough successes for some of our positions. And in fact, when we look at some of the business results that show us that only 1 in 4 executives currently in seat was actually identified through a succession plan. That suggests that perhaps we're not actually casting the net wide enough within our own organization to identify the talent that might be sitting, you know, right amongst us. And then the final challenge is really around rusty pipelines. And that's where individuals are in the pipeline for succession, but not necessarily ready. So they may have been identified through a really subjective process, for example. And when we transition them into that leadership role, we find perhaps they would have been better off as a technical specialist.
Okay.
And that evolution into the leadership role doesn't set them up for success.
You just mentioned some of the challenges with the pipelines, and you know there have been cases where HR managers have gone as far as saying pipelines are actually broken. Mm. How would we go about fixing them?
So there's a couple of ways. I mean, the first is what we encourage our organizations to do from a best practice standpoint is to look at much broader strategies when it comes to succession pipelines. So rather than identifying particular successes for particular roles, casting that net more widely. To say in terms of aspiration, ability and engagement across our workforce over 3 to 5 years, who are those identified individuals? And how do we develop them more broadly for a range of roles at an executive level rather than for a particular position?
What about organizations that have now developed people for a position that may not be relevant going into the future? How do they reposition these individuals?
That's where the quality of the relationship between the individual and the line manager is really key. We assume that an individual's aspiration, so wanting to be in a more senior position, is something static. But actually that can change by up to 23% over the course of their career. Meaning at some stage I can be far more engaged and at other times I may be less engaged. And one of the key factors can be exactly the point that you raised, which is the position that I've been grooming myself for over time is now no longer available in the position, or someone else has been successed into it. And that's when it's really important that the line manager is living close to their team to understand, okay, how else can we enrich your role, possibly horizontally, or look at readiness more broadly for the executive team so that that individual doesn't become disengaged and either becomes a flight risk or their performance deteriorates as a result of that disengagement.
What about on the opposite end where people have not necessarily been identified or groomed and these positions open up and you're basically throwing somebody into the deep end? Tell us there how their interaction with a line manager ought to be to ensure that they succeed.
And we do find this within organizations, particularly if the build or buy strategy is not particularly well thought out. So often it's a case that a position may become vacant and either we discover we actually can't afford the type of talent that we need to bring into this particular role, so therefore let's start looking internally. Yet we don't have people that are quite ready, so we'll pick the readiest of the bunch. Now, this has a range of negative unintended consequences, I think, both on the individual and the organization more broadly, because the individual being supported into the role requires a lot more onboarding. This is something that's overlooked generally, but is critically important when it comes to those individuals who may not be as ready. And that onboarding process into those executive roles really can take anywhere from 6 months to a year realistically. Mm-hmm. And it's going to involve a lot of hands-on involvement, both from whoever is managing that individual and from the supporting team, to make sure that they are set up for success.
You also said that it may have negative implications for the organization itself. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Sure. So if you're appointing individuals that are not yet ready for a particular position, firstly, their performance may suffer in that particular role. So from an overall business standpoint, there are issues. But we must also be aware that the talent is very quick to benchmark itself and very quick to look to those more senior positions as a particular benchmark. And if they feel that individuals are not living up to those particular standards, they may feel that perhaps their own aspirations are dampened. Perhaps they were overlooked. Perhaps or the organization doesn't take talent as seriously as they advocate through some of the HR processes.
And in cases like that, how do you still go about instilling confidence in your workforce?
It's certainly a challenge. And when we engage with many organizations, often they have had mixed results when it comes to how they've approached succession. So they've had some great successes, but they've also had some spectacular failures. And it's for an organization to really be honest about what's worked, what hasn't, and give the workforce a legitimate plan around how it plans on addressing this in future. So what is our philosophy when it comes to succession management? How do we support our individuals to be ready for the next position? And how do we support them through that onboarding process? And then be consistent in terms of how you apply that in the future going forward. Mm-hmm. Take the lessons. Don't shy away from them.
Now, I take it that most of these factors would be company and organization specific, but are there any that would generally hold across industries, across organizations, and what would those be?
Certainly. So, I mean, for us, it's something we often talk about is future-proofing your succession strategy. And some of the key themes that have come out there are around taking a broader-based approach when it comes to looking for your particular talent. The second is, you know, making sure that your line managers and your HR department really are up to speed and up to scratch when it comes to the type of hands-on involvement that's going to be required of them to keep those individuals engaged over time. Because succession management is not, you know, it's not an overnight type of thing. This is your long-term play. So you need to be committed to it for mm-hmm. over the longer term.
And you're talking about being committed to it over the longer term, and there's certain key individuals that are going to be identified within an organization to manage these processes. What happens when this individual leaves? How do you manage an ongoing project like this?
It really depends on how that individual has chosen to undertake that portfolio. What we hope is that certainly any HR professional, business leader who's invested in succession is invested in it not in terms of individuals that they have identified, so through a subjective process, but that they've put an objective process in mm-hmm. place, a legacy that can live on when they are removed from the system. So an objective set of metrics against which we define leaders, against which we develop leaders over time, to make sure that objectivity can really be maintained when an individual business sponsor leaves the system.
Mm-hmm. Now, Lauren, as you mentioned, this is an ever-changing environment, business unusual, and in this environment, what in terms of employee management processes will set apart organizations from their competitors?
So what we're finding is organizations that use best practice, but that tailor it for the unique needs of the individual. And that's a really fine balance, making sure that you're making talent decisions that are informed by data, by best practice, by what the research is saying, but at the same time, making it fit for your own organization. And making sure that both your line managers and your HR department are really equipped to see those processes through over the longer term.
So there's an element of agility that comes with this.
Absolutely. And the agility is not necessarily within the individual. It's also within the processes themselves. And we can't expect individuals within our organization to be all things to all people. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure that the processes around are adapting or identifying and developing people for a range of roles and the roles that are going to be the best fit for them over their longer term career.
Well, there you have it. The most successful organizations are those that will be able to come up with agile processes that will align ability, aspiration, and engagement with some of the evolving needs of business in an ever-changing environment. Lauren Huntington, Management Consultant at CEB Now Gartner, thanks for sharing your insight with us.
Thank you very much.